All right, this is Friday the 21st. I'm here with Mr. Zespi at the Logan Hardware Arcade.
Hello, hello.
All right, do you have any questions before we
No.
How long have you been in the arcade business?
I guess as far as having games on location, that would be 2009.
Okay, so fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
How old is this specifically?
We started the bar in February of last year.
So oh, okay.
Of this year, February 2014.
Mm. Why did you enter the industry?
I've been a collector and restorer for a while. I'm a big fan of coin-op history and of video games and arcade games, both mechanical, video game, and pinball for a while. And I started with consoles and handhelds and things like that, and that led me, of course, to the bigger machines.
What were your expectations when you started working in the video game industry?
My expectations? I mean, I guess just hoping to have fun, hoping that other people would enjoy the stuff that I enjoy as well.
Your expectations pretty much the same now?
Yeah, you know, maintenance is, I knew would be an issue, but the things that are an issue as far as maintenance are slightly different than I thought.
Mm.
Coin mechs are just an ongoing, constant struggle. It's the most important thing on a game, because without it, the game doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, that was more than I thought, because before that, for many years, the arcade that we have at the record store was on free play, so we didn't have to deal with it. But otherwise, it's about what I expected.
Okay. Is this a 9-to-5 job?
It's more of a 9-to-12 job. Because it's a bar, it's open late, so, you know, we're here until 2 in the morning most nights, sometimes 3.
How do you feel about those hours?
It's nice. It's fun, you know. A little tiring, but it's nice to be here when it's quiet to get stuff done, and it's nice to be here at night to see the hustle bustle and see people enjoying the games, you know.
How would you describe a typical day at your job?
A typical day? A little bit of problem solving, a little bit of shoveling to get just crap done, and a little bit of enjoyment, somewhere in a mix of those things.
Mm-hmm. What impact do you think games have on the players?
You know, I think some of it is nostalgia. I think that's why there's a lot more places to play now than there ever has been.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a theme people like. I think people think of it that way. But I think a lot more people are into it, especially at our location. I go to a lot of the other locations and people, you know, they play, they're having fun, but it's very shallow. Mm-hmm. Like, as far as the play, they're not playing in a deep way.
Yeah.
Where I feel like we get a broad mix, and we try to encourage people to play games with each other. We have games like Killer Queen, that's brand new. It's one of the few that exist right now on test, and it's a very social game.
Yeah.
So we try to make it social. We have little leagues and specific nights where we try to get people together to play and make it more of a social sort of thing. So hopefully what they're getting out of it is a little bit of fun, a little bit of distraction, and a little bit of social interaction at the same time.
Yeah. Can we describe the leagues a little more?
There's a couple leagues. There's the Chicago Pinball League, or Pinball Chicago, run by Ben Vigen. He does a league over the whole city where there's multiple locations involved, and each location has a home team, and they kind of go around from location to location playing in a bracketed league. And then we have a local one, the Logan Arcade Local Pinball League, which is run by our tech, James. And that's more about being social.
Mm-hmm.
It's always here. It's only at this location. The games change every week. It is rated. There is scoring, and there is some competition, but it's meant to play different games, get to know them, and get to know other people through pinball.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, like, league nights and stuff like that?
Or? Yeah, we do a league night every Tuesday for the local league, and then every Monday during the season for the Pinball Chicago League run by Ben.
Okay. Do you think arcades have an impact on the community?
Not as much as they once did. Mm-hmm. You know, they were both an awesome place for families to go play and also, you know, a place that some communities were afraid of because they thought that it was a bad element.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, I think the impact, again, a little bit of nostalgia, a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a younger group of people getting into it. By younger, I mean in their early 20s, that didn't grow up with this stuff, and it's becoming more than nostalgia, and they're actually getting into it. I see people trying to get higher scores and trying to compete with their friends. So hopefully it has longer legs than just this bubble that's going on right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's the hope.
Yeah. So what makes a good coin op game?
You know, it's... I forget who said it first, but it's... easy to understand, hard to master. That's what everybody in the industry says in multiple interviews and documentaries and in person. That's what designers and that's what Gary Stern will say. That's what Jody will say from Stern. I think that's a lot of it. I think nowadays, I don't think it needs to be a full immersive experience. I think that's nice, like the new Star Trek or Star Wars game that came out. It's basically a Gundam pod. But it's insanely expensive, super cool looking, but as an operator, I couldn't see it ever making enough money to pay for itself. But anyway, a good game for me is a balance of same things, easy to understand, hard to master, but also now more of a social element, a game that you can kind of take some ownership over and have fun with. I think if a game's too intimidating up front, like Marble Madness is very hard, but everyone remembers it or thinks they remember it, but they remember the NES version, which is a hack controller, not a trackball. It's actually a very hard game, and we have it set not just to easy, but to very easy, and most people can't get past the first level. But it's a great game. I think nowadays, not many people are old enough to remember when games came out, you had to learn to play them. Most of the people that come here are from the 90s, and they remember a joystick is always directional for your character, and you have a button that's either kicking or punching, and you move one direction. You know, that's the depth of most players' knowledge, where a game like Tron or Gorf or Marble Madness, you need to learn the game and learn the controls before you'll understand what you're doing, or Stargate or Defender or Robotron. But those are very, very, very good games, but they require a little bit more from the player up front. So I think for a game nowadays, it's got to be easy to understand because people's attention spans are so short, they'll just walk away unsatisfied. Like, that game didn't work. You know, like, well, there's three instructions. First one is, this moves, this shoots. Second instruction, but they don't even read that. It happens to me, too, with pinball. It's a small card with a very small amount of instructions, but I still don't read it, and I'll sit there on four games. What am I supposed to do? Well, it's written right there if I just take the time, you know?
What makes a bad coin-op game?
I guess the opposite, you know, a game that's hard to understand, maybe even easy to master, I don't know, or hard to master. Games that require too much out of the player up front, where they just don't understand what the point is of the game, which is too bad because I feel like some of those games, like Defender or Robotron in particular, or Smash TV, they're actually not that hard to understand, but the threshold is much lower for people nowadays. They just don't want to take the time to figure out a game. So I guess a game that's too hard to understand up front becomes intimidating, so people walk away. You know?
How often do you play your own machines?
You know, not often enough. I play in the league now, and that's been great because it's making me... It just makes you play differently when there's a little bit of competition or something on the line. Not to mention the league gives... like a regimen, like you have to practice and you have to be on a specific day at a specific time and you have to play. I'm trying to get back to playing more, but it used to be that all these games were just mine in my private collection, so I could play them whenever I wanted. It was kind of on my terms, where now I might be waiting in line for a game, and it's, you know, it's just a little different. But I try to play a few times every day, even if it's just a game here or there.
What makes a good arcade environment?
I think for me, depends on how you define that. If you want it to be an old school arcade, it should be kind of creepy. It should be a little bit wet, kind of gross, and really dark. But that's not the vibe I'm going for.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be inclusive, number one.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be based on a love of the games and a love of the machines, and not just, you know, some people that get into arcade games now, it's just a theme. You could be into tiki bars.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's just a skin to put over a place that's meant to sell booze. You know, it's not about the games. It's not about playing them even. It's just a theme. You know? But for me, a good arcade, you should be able to hear the games but not be totally overwhelmed. The lighting should be a little bit lower so you're focusing on the games. And it just feels a little bit more mellow. I think that you should have space around a game. Like, we really obsessed about, you know, we want the most games possible, but obsessed about how close can a game be, like on a pinball game, before you're really up on somebody else, especially with two players standing next to each other. Then maybe there's a two-player game on each, and now you got a guy waiting behind you. So just keeping it comfortable and inclusive, and just having a nice vibe, you know. I think that's a lot of it for me.
Yeah. Have you ever been to any arcades with a bad environment, you would say?
Yeah, you know, I've been to a few arcades where the focus was, I don't know what the focus would be, but it was like the environment was so loud and so packed. Things like the layout of a game. I was at a place where there's a game I wanted to play, but it was off in a corner, cut off by a little bit of a wall, so that if you had one person playing a game, let's say in this row four here, if someone was playing Q-Bert, nobody could get to any of the other games without asking them to move. And it's like, that's not... It had no flow to it, and the games had no rhyme or reason for where they were at. They were just kind of shoved wherever. And it felt like no one had ever played the games that worked there, because it's like, man, you can't orient a game that way, or you, I think that, or set up on a pinball game, if a pinball game isn't leveled, or if something's set up badly, or there's an arcade I went to recently where they had great games, expensive games, but there'd be like a flipper rubber broken, you can't play the game, and it's like, that's literally a 5-second fix. You open it up, you put a rubber on it, you shut it, that's it, it's working. But because they don't come from that world at this particular place, they had to wait for some tech to get there. It's like, no, man, just open the game up, fix it. You know. So,
what is your favorite arcade game?
My favorite video game or pinball game?
Video game.
My favorite video game. I really like Q-Bert's Cubes.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Nibbler. I like Pac-Mania. I guess that's not a favorite. My favorite right now actually is Super Breakout. Based on, of course, Breakout, which Steve Wozniak did the design work for, based on what Bushnell wanted, which is classic brick-breaking game. But it's, again, easy to understand, way harder than you'd think, and awesome. It's so simple and fun. The sounds are easy and simple. I'd probably say right now that game or a Namco System 1 game called Dragon Spirit. It's basically a shmup, but you're a dragon, and it has a ground shooting element as well as, you know, regular fire button. So you have bombs and fire buttons, and it's just really hard and really weird.
Yeah.
I like that a lot too.
Are there any tricks you know for it?
Not so much. No. You know, just time. You got to practice.
Just skill, basically.
Yeah. I really like shmups lately. My friend Jeff got me into it. He's a collector of shmup stuff and plays in that scene, and used to have a big get-together once a year here with us. And those guys are just, they're fun players. They're competitive, but it's very welcoming, like, group. They're very nice guys, and it's all about getting to know a game in a deep way, where you sit down at home with a PCB and either a super gun or some sort of JAMA cabinet, and you learn this game.
Yeah.
You know? But that's an extension of like Japanese arcades, where you know, with the super plays and people really getting deep into the game. Yeah. So.
While working here, what is the weirdest thing that has ever happened to you?
Weirdest thing. Well, learning that bathrooms get destroyed every night, tagged and broken, just like, what the heck? Weirdest thing. I think game-wise, it's just realizing how young some of the people are. They don't, like, people think they remember Tron, or they think they remember Pac-Man, but they remember it as far as the pop culture part of it.
Yeah.
They don't actually remember playing the game, because if they did, they would know how to play it. And they'll step up to Tron and say, I don't understand. Well, they're not grabbing all the controls. Maybe they're only grabbing half the controls. Or Robotron, where one person will grab one joystick and they don't understand why it doesn't work. It's like, no, you got to play with two joysticks. Or Pac-Man, where they're like, oh, this is really slow and boring. It's like, yeah, because you don't remember original Pac-Man.
Yeah.
You never really played it in the arcade before. That's kind of interesting to see.
Have you noticed any major changes over the time that you've been here?
No. I mean, you know, finding a crowd. We rotate games a lot. It's interesting to see what people play and don't play, which is kind of a moving target. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
What did you do before you entered the industry?
Been in the music business on and off since the 90s. Got a record store with John down the block, and Logan Hardware Records, and that's where we started with the video games. I was in this location first. And we had video games in the back room on free play as kind of a museum collection.
Yeah.
Now that's down the block, and we still have games on that location as well.
What was your best day ever at this job?
You know, one day that was really nice. Well, it's always nice when, you know, arcade legends stop by. You know, you have Eugene Jarvis or Mark Ritchie or Steve Ritchie or Gary Stern or George Gomez or John Trudeau or, you know, John Borg. You have these designers and people have been in the industry stopping by to play or to check things out. That's a lot of fun. But one of the best days was I was sitting there watching people play Killer Queen, that new game that we have, and it just had a nice vibe of grabbing people that you didn't know and they wanted to play with each other and they were having fun and yelling and screaming at the game, and just it reminded me of what I think arcades used to be, what I remember them being, which was, you know, you might meet up with someone you don't know and be like, hey, you're pretty good at that. Why don't we play a game together? Or can you show me what you did there? Or it's just a different vibe. And we've had that a few times, and it was really nice to see, because I think it's a living thing, or can be a living thing. It doesn't have to be this flash in the pan bubble of nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know?
How has the industry impacted your life outside of work?
A little less sleep.
Yeah.
It's really satisfying. Coin-op in general is such a cool history and a very American history. I love it, and it's kind of like, I always say I'm I'm the equivalent of a crazy cat lady, but for video games. I just can't stop getting them.
Yeah.
Someone will say, oh, we found another 10 of these, and they're going to be thrown away. And I'm like, give me this. I'll take them. I don't have anywhere to put them. But I'll take them. Because it's a finite resource. These things, a lot of these games are 30-some years old. Most of these games are older than the players.
Yeah.
And it's part of our history, part of this American history of gaming. And I don't want it to be lost, you know? And it's fun. I really enjoy the history a lot.
What major projects have you worked on that were important to your career?
Coin-op wise?
Yeah, coin-op wise.
I guess I've been lucky enough to just have nice discussions with people like Andy from Roth Rills, or Eugene, or Gary Stern, or just, you know, shooting the shit with George Gomez. That's just, I don't know if it's important, but it was important to me because these are people that know what they're talking about. And someone like George, who came from Marvin Glass and Associates, or worked there and did toy design, you know, and worked on video games. I mean, he worked on that Capcom cabinet over there. He designed that. Or, you know, he worked on Gorf, and he hid his initials in different parts of the game. He showed me that. That stuff's cool.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. So,
how do you feel about people playing marathon game sessions on your machine?
I love it. We've had a handful. We had a guy who played Nibbler for, I forget how long, over 50-some hours. It was 3 days almost, I think.
Yeah.
Straight. I think that's great. I think that, you know, people will think it's something nerdy or a novelty, or they think it's funny that these guys want to play these marathon sessions. But I think it's amazing. I think, like Walter Day always says, these are athletes, you know. I think of it that way. I think because it's in video games and it has this, like, nerdy or geeky context, people don't think of it that way, but I do. I think it's really cool when someone plays to some insane level. I watched Lonnie McDonald play his 100th game of Joust, rolling the game over at the Old Williams on one of my machines in front of the game designer. And the game designer afterward, I got to sit there and listen to him talk to Lonnie about it. I didn't even know what the game would do at that level, because he'd never seen anyone at that level. He designed the game, but he had no idea where it would go, you know? So that was really cool to see.
Have you had anyone break a major record on one of your machines?
Yeah, we've had a couple things. I guess in this location we had the one-hour Tron high score world record by David Cruz, who's a Tron master. And that was really cool to see, especially since Tron, if you're going to play a one-hour, you're not point-pressing. You're trying to clear levels, so it changes your patterns dramatically. So that was cool to see. We had we've had high scores on Nibbler. We've had high scores on, like, we have Rick Carter here for Nibbler, and he did a world record. We did Tetris for both MAME and Arcade, were put here by the same guy in the same game. First game he had played in, I think he said 5 years, and he just killed it. That was Jimmy Linderman. He also set a world record on Pac-Mania, which was cool to see because I like that game. Yeah, there's been a handful of ones. It's been cool to see.
Has this affected your business in a positive way?
The high scores?
Yeah.
I think it brings some attention to the place. I think it's a nice little news story, you know. But and we actually, the day that we had all these awesome players here earlier this year, Donald Hayes was playing Centipede. And he's just messing around with the game and doing really well, of course, because he's an amazing player. And it was all mushrooms, and it looked crazy, and it gathered a crowd. Because when you're playing at that level, people can tell. They look at the screen, and they're like, holy shit, I've never seen that. That's insane. He's playing, and this guy leans over to a dude next to him with his phone, is like, this guy's at whatever amount he was at, I don't remember. He goes, good luck. The world record is 2.5 million. And then the guy next to him, Mitchell Elliott, looked at him and said, yeah, he's the world record holder. He's just screwing around with the machine. Yeah. And the guy's like, what? And just started telling everyone that story that night. Like, that's the world record holder for this game, and blah, blah, blah. I got the same play. It was kind of cool.
What was your busiest year?
This is our first year, so, you know, work in progress.
Yeah. How do you feel about arcade equipment for games like big motorcycles, racing simulators, stuff like that?
You know, if we had more space, I think it'd be cool to have games like that that are more immersive. I would love to have Gundam pods if money weren't an object. There's a lot of Japanese games I would love to have if money were no object. I don't know. I want them all.
Yeah.
I want all of them.
What are some of the risks you've taken in this industry?
Just collecting these games and trying to open a place like this, I guess, was a risk. You know, other people do it, but they do it for different reasons. And I don't know, I guess the risk for us was, will people understand what we're trying to do and understand that we're not just another arcade bar? So will they notice that? I hope so, you know.
How do you interact with other parts of the industry, like trade organizations, anything like that?
You know, people stop in. There's a Replay magazine did a thing on us. I think that is one difference between us and a lot of the other places, is most other places don't really care about the industry as much. It's just about having a bar, and it's fun, and so they don't pay attention to some of the smaller parts of the industry. So we've been included, and that's been very nice.
How has marketing the arcade over the years changed?
You know, we don't do a ton of marketing. Anything we do is mostly Facebook and things like that. So,
what is the reputation of the arcade industry in general?
A little seedy, I'd say. Yeah. You know, it has a funny history. It was, you know, pinball was illegal in the States until 1976. Mayor LaGuardia ran on a campaign of removing pinball from New York. That was on his reelection campaign. That was his main platform. And that's pretty insane.
Yeah.
And it was made illegal in all major cities until 76. So it probably has kind of a seedy, gambling-ish, generally people think of it that way. But I think if you just scratch one notch below the surface, you'll realize it's actually a pretty amazing history of gaming, but gaming for, you know, the money-making devices. So it has to balance fun and revenue, you know?
Yeah, why do you think there's been such a resurgence in old-style games?
I think part of it is nostalgia. Part of it is, oh, I remember that. That was on Nintendo. I think another part of it is you can't experience like a pinball game. There's great emulation out there. The guys from Pinball Arcade, Farsight, awesome games. And I play them on my phone. And, you know, when there's an iPad around, I'll play it on there. But it's just not the same. Pinball's a physical game in the physical world. You've got to play it that way. So I think that's part of it, pinball-wise. Video game-wise, you know, it's just a different experience. It's like people say, why is vinyl making a resurgence? Well, because it's a physical, clumsy object that's fun to interact with instead of just clicking on your Spotify on your phone, you know? Sure, I could play Qbert right here by myself on my phone, but I think most people would say it's a lot more fun to play in an upright if you can, you know?
Do you see that continuing?
I hope so. I think that some percentage of the people will hold on. Watching the people that play here and in all the other places in Chicago, you know, probably the majority of them aren't in it for the long haul, but they're not gamers. They're just looking for something fun to do, and that's great. That's fun, and hopefully we'll convert some of those people over to long-term players. But I don't know. I hope it has long legs. There's Whitney. Hey, man.
What is up, my man?
What's up, brother?
How you doing?
Real good, man. Real
awesome. Yeah, sorry it took me a little longer to get here than I thought.
Here's the guys that are going to interview you. They're doing two separate projects.
Okay.
So I'm doing this one, and these people over here will be doing one with you. I figured you can be up front here because it's quieter.
Okay.
Do you want to throw your bags in my office?
Yeah, dude.
It runs Broken Token.
Oh, okay. Have you faced any special challenges in the coin-op industry?
Yeah, you know, there are weird laws about how many games you can have in different places. You know, that was a challenge. That's a challenge anywhere in the States, and that's a backlash of people back in the day trying to hold back arcades because they were afraid of truancy or drugs or whatever bad connotation they had. But otherwise, no. I mean, it's a challenge of any business. You know, keep the lights on, keep people having fun, you know.
How would you describe the culture of your business?
Hopefully, it comes off as inclusive and sincere. Because that's what we try for, is to be a very inclusive environment. And just sincerely, we love these games. And most of the games on the floor are games I personally love. That being said, if someone really loves a game I don't love, that's fine. This is supposed to be inclusive, so I'll put it on the floor. You know?
How do you decide the price of a game?
You know, for us, we keep basically the cost the game was when it came out, give or take. And it just needs to feel like a good value, because there's a very fine balance between, sure, could that game take a dollar? Probably could. You'll lower the amount of people that play it and maybe end up summing to the same revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where if you kept it at a quarter or 50 cents, more people play it, the revenue might be the same. But by having more people play, you get more people into it, you get more repeat business. You have to find a balance of feeling like a value for people. If it's too low, like a lot of the places that are free play, a lot of the guys I know don't enjoy it as much because it's not monetized, you put no value in it.
Yeah.
If you're playing a game, so what? I'll play it again. What if you came there with $5 and all you had to do was spend $5? Well, that game, that quarter, just meant something to you because you only got 20 of them, you know?
Is this a family business?
Sure. I mean, it's my family. It's me.
Yeah. What is your main demographic?
I would say, you know, 21 to 45. We have a very good mix in general. There's probably a little bit more men interested in it and that come in, but it's pretty balanced, especially compared to the other places I visited. It seems more balanced age-wise, especially.
Mm-hmm. Any special tactics you use to target that demographic?
I try to build it right and have a nice place so that people come and have fun, really.
Mm-hmm. What are your biggest daily concerns?
Maintenance, more maintenance.
Yeah. What is your turnover of customers?
During the day, as far as how many people through the door?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough to say. I would say that most people that come in here spend a couple of hours from what I see.
Do you have like a lot of repeat customers?
Yeah. We have regulars that come in, especially on the weekends. We have regular customers that, you know, there's people that have made Facebook pages about some of our specific games, and they try to come up with times for people to come out and have fun and like coordinate groups of people coming out. So.
Yeah. How do you compete with the other arcades?
You know, by just putting our best foot forward, by trying to let it be known that we really do give a shit about these games, both in the curating of the games as well as the maintenance and the upkeep of the games. We try to keep it fresh. We put new games in all the time, way more than anybody else.
Yeah.
I think it's also because we have a bigger pool to pull from, because we have a lot of games compared to most places. And then just trying to make it an inclusive, nice place. You know, paying attention to things like, is music too loud? Can people talk? Can they, you know, trying to just pay attention to the environment. You know.
How has the home digital gaming affected your business?
I think it helps. I think a lot of the people that have, you know, a little arcade where you can download stuff on Xbox and things like that, where they can experience some of these games cheaply at home and then find out, oh, shit, these exist here in Chicago. I'd like to go play Marble Madness in person, you know. So I think it's helpful.
Yeah. How do you choose the games that you put in your business?
Originally, I tried to have a balance of all different eras, all different manufacturers, and all different kinds of games to try to have a balance. And then we just kind of watched what people gravitated towards and tried to fill the holes and take out games that people didn't enjoy and put in games that people do enjoy. You know, and build on things that people like. Like, if someone likes Qbert, try Qbert's Cubes. If people like Black Knight, maybe look at Black Knight 2000. If people like Tron, try Discs of Tron, you know, things like that. Moving kind of laterally when possible.
Mm. Are there any benefits to being in the coin-op industry?
Fun. I like it. Eugene Jarvis always says, you know, you're monetizing, I think this is the way he says it, it's one quarter at a time. That's how you know how you're doing. I think that's amazing because it's incremental. It doesn't seem like much, but a quarter at a time over many games, over many days, and you can afford to pay for these games and maintain them, you know? That's the hope, and it's fun to see because it's kind of like everyone's coming in with a handful of votes and they get a vote for a game, and I always say, if you like a game, play it, because if it doesn't get plays, we're going to pull it.
Yeah. Are licensed games more profitable?
I think up front it's very helpful because someone already has an attachment to it. Like Walking Dead does very well because people know the theme, they know the show. The show is the most watched thing on TV right now, so of course that helps. Yeah. If it was the exact same game and had some bespoke theme, then it probably wouldn't do as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure it wouldn't.
How do you feel about ticket arcades?
Like Redemption? I think it can be really fun. I think sometimes those games are a little bit... they're not very deep. But then there's other ones I've played that are totally ingenious and fun. I mean, obviously Whack-A-Mole, which was designed by Aaron Fechner based on a game that Bob Space Racers wanted him to make. Still an awesome game. Yeah. Still makes money. Simple and fun. And then I see other stuff like there's an Operation game that came out. Such an obvious theme. You know, they had done Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yeah.
But that was a really cool game. Really simple and fun to play. And Redemption's kind of cool, you know. I enjoy going to Chuck E. Cheese once in a while and doing that sort of thing.
What makes pinball popular?
I think, like I said earlier, it's a physical game that exists in the real world that you can't properly emulate or play in any other form. So,
what makes one pinball machine better than another one?
You know, that's a tough thing. I think it can be theme. I think it can be flow. I think it can be speed of the game. I think it can be just how it feels, which is kind of silly to say, but certain shots feel good, and they're fun to play. I think themed pinballs do very well because people know, you know, you walk up to AC/DC or Metallica, and you know what it's going to sound like because you know those bands, you know, or Tron, or like I said, Walking Dead.
What was your first coin-op experience?
I don't know if it was my first, but probably my first was going to the Knights of Columbus in Fargo, North Dakota with my twin brother, and we would play an old Williams pitch and bat mechanical game. It was great because for one quarter, one person got to be the pitcher and one person got to work the bat, and it was a lot of fun. It was mechanical and kind of weird and exciting to play because there wasn't many mechanicals around at that point. So that's probably my earliest that I remember.
What do you see as the future for coin-op?
I think the future could be really bright if people break out of the mold a little bit and do games like Killer Queen that are more social. And that you got to start where people are at now. And where people are at now is they don't have long memories and they don't, if either they didn't play or they don't remember playing more complicated games. So I think they've got to be simple and fun, not intimidating up front, social and competitive, but also cooperative like Killer Queen. I think games like that will really help. And also accessible. They're not stupidly expensive. I think Raw Thrills and Play Mechanics do a great job, and Namco does a great job. But a lot of those games are drivers or shooters. You know, that's basically what people are doing. And for good reason. But I think that people could branch out a little further and look at the independent gaming scene and look at what people are doing there. Look at what people can design on smaller, simpler systems. Maybe open software up and include a small group of independent developers and do more of a crowd-sourced code setup where people could almost hex-style design levels or change rule sets for games and involve people, you know, more.
What do you see as the future for your arcade?
If I can cram more games in here, more games, you know. Hopefully people just continue to have fun and want to come out and learn about different games and how to play them and bring their friends, you know.
Do you have any plans to expand?
There's just no, there's no space, so unfortunately we can't expand, but just keep shuffling games around, find interesting new games for people to play or old games and maintain the ones that we have the best we can.
Are there any other kids in the area here? Or just
yeah, there's a bunch. There's a there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 or 6 right now.
Now, what makes your arcade different from other arcades in a marketing standpoint?
I think the fact that the style of the place is a building that's been here for a long time. You know, we have an original bar from the 30s. It's not, you know, we try to keep things as if they always were here. Same yeah. with these games. You know, as if this arcade has been here for a long time. We want that vibe of, you know, it's not a new, hip, cool place. It should look like, oh, this was a bar that was always here, and now they have more games. You know, that's the vibe we're going for.
And have you always been in charge just of your business? Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yep.
What do you want people to know about the coin-op industry?
I want them to know that it's a real important part of the history of America. You know, it's a really American thing, and it's part of our culture, you know. I also want people to know that it's just like video games. It's not just screwing around. There's a little bit more there if you want there to be. There can be a lot more there if you really want to dig deep into a game, you know. I mean, I see the resurgence in, like, people playing more Euro games and playing more board games, and that's great. And I feel like you can take that same interest and put it into a pinball game or a video game, because there is that depth of play for a lot of games.
How many games do you have to maintain to keep a good income?
You know, you don't think about the games as a source of income as much as we think of them supporting themselves maintenance-wise. Mm. Because, you know, they have parts that wear out and things that need to be replaced. So I think of it more that way.
Yeah. What's the life cycle of a game?
You know, up front, there's always a bump because it's the new kid on the street. Then it usually plateaus out within a couple of weeks, and at that point, it's as long as it's maintained well, it depends on people's interest and how much they play it. But on a newer game, I would say maybe three months or so before it really levels out. If it's an exciting new game, until people are like, "Yeah, yeah, I know about this game. What's the next thing?" You know, somewhere around there.
You said earlier you rotate the games.
Constantly, you know, we'll pull things that either aren't working, you know, physically, they aren't actually playing well, or people just aren't playing them because they don't like the gameplay. And we'll move things around, which I think a lot of other places will put a game and just leave it where you got to move things. It's about the flow. It's about the context of the games around it. It's about where they're at physically in the place that can change people's experience. So a game that doesn't do well. In this specific area, might do better over by the door. Might do well over by a different game. You know? So you got to move things. You know.
Where do you buy your machines?
Usually, we buy them broken from old operators or in collections that we buy from other friends. You can buy games retail, but it's not advisable to do so because it's very expensive. That, and we do most of the work ourselves. So. You know, we can buy boat anchors, we can buy horrible games in bad shape and do the work ourselves and get games that we couldn't afford if we were buying them from a retailer, you know.
You fix them up yourself?
Mm-hmm. We have a full-time tech, and then we bring in a part-time guy, and then once in a while hire out another guy if need be.
How often do your machines need repairs?
Every day.
Every day?
It's a full-time job for James every day. It gets more than a full-time job.
Yeah. Where do you get your parts for machines, especially older ones?
A lot of these games are a couple of games in one, where we've had two broken games, and you make one working game, and then you harvest parts from the other. There are some collectors that make new parts for games, and there are new old stock parts. Like, we cleaned out a distributor a couple weeks ago. Not a distributor, operator, and I got two huge boxes of Wico joysticks, which I can use for boards or parts, so he's got to find them where he can.
Do some of the machines need more maintenance than others?
Pinball is almost always more to maintain than video games. It's just more moving parts, and you're bashing it with a ball all day, you know?
Generally, how do people interact with the machines?
You know, I think they have fun. I think that most people interact pretty well with them. They're not beating them up too bad.
Do you ever see people mistreating them?
Yeah, it happens. Usually out of frustration when they're not playing too well.
Yeah.
But not so bad.
How do you protect them?
You know, just by being around.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. These things are made to be played. They were made to be put in environments like this. So I think if you have a generally decent crowd, then you don't have to worry about it as much. You know? And I think we do. I think we have a great customer base of people that come in and play.
Have you ever been injured by a machine?
Oh, yeah. I've dropped machines on me. I was moving a machine because it's typical that you'll move a bunch of games late at night. If you were on some road trip and you come home and you got to unload them and you're unloading them yourself and then you hit a bump and I ended up dropping a pretty heavy game on myself and I remember laying there like, man, I don't want someone to find me trapped under a game, so I got the game off myself. I've been, you know, gotten some pretty good sized jolts from different games. It's usually dumb stuff like that.
Has any of your employees been injured, like, in this arcade specifically?
Just little things, just myself and James, typically, when you're working on a game, you know, it happens.
So earlier we were talking about meeting some of the good people in the industry. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, well, you know, Chicago is really the home of gaming. It's the home of pinball, for sure, and coin-op in general. A lot of the most famous video games came out of here as well, and because of that, a lot of the designers are still around here.
Yeah.
And that's just really fun to see those guys come in and play games and be able to talk to them about the history of gaming in general. I mean, it was a huge industry,
yeah.
You know, mostly centered in Chicago.
Have you ever met Walter Gay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Walter does a series of baseball cards, basically, about the history of gaming, and he actually did one of me. It was super cool. There's a couple of them floating around here. He gave me a stack of them last time I saw him. It was pretty nice and kind of blew my mind. Walter's a very, very, very nice guy, and he's been very supportive of me and of the things that we've tried to do. He's been awesome, been very good. Him and Mark Hoff, Mark works with him. Mark has introduced me to so many people, and I think they know that I'm coming at it with some reverence and some love for the history, so they've been very nice to introduce me to people because of them.
Have there been any specific skills you've acquired over the time working here?
I've become a better player of all kinds of different games just by having them around more, you know. And learning how to fix stuff. Not as much anymore, but when I first started collecting, I learned a lot.
Are there any... Did I ask you that? You have a pretty low employee turnover. People like working here?
What's that?
Do you have a high or low employee turnover?
Pretty low.
Pretty low, yeah.
Pretty low, yeah. People seem to stick around. I think it's a decent job.
Yeah. Do you play any console games or just stick with
Yeah. Mostly retro console games or I play some homebrew 2600 and 7800 games. I really like handhelds. I collect Game & Watch, Tomy, you know, Tomytronic, or Tomytronic, Epoch. One of my favorite companies is Entex. I really like VFD style games, like large scale integration, like LSI VFD games are kind of my wheelhouse. I like those a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If I had more time, I would just collect and play handhelds.
What games do you recommend for people to learn about point art?
You know, I keep saying it, but Robotron is an amazing game.
Yeah.
Nibbler is an amazing game. I think those are great places to start for more, for Joust, Killer Queen, Breakout, Super Breakout. I like all those games right now.
What kind of advice would you give someone trying to pursue a similar career?
Just give a shit. Do it for the right reasons. I think that'll come across in any business. I think a lot of people get into businesses because they're business people, and that's okay. They can do a decent job that way, but if it lacks passion other than the bottom line, that's going to come across, and you're going to, in the same way that everybody got into making video games in the 80s, everybody did, and it screwed it up for a lot of people because there was a glut of horribly designed games, and it caused a video game crash. Because everyone's like, I can make money, I can do that. Well, there's a lot of shitty games. And then you have people that really give a crap about games trying to make things, and now there's this lot of bad games that are kind of polluting the waters. So I think, you know, give a crap. You know, like what you do, enjoy it, be passionate about it, and good things will happen, you know.
Were you around for the crash?
No. I mean, I was, but I don't remember it. I was too young. I remember there being some shit horrible games coming out. Like, what the fuck is this? This is horrible. You know, E.T., horrible. Pac-Man for 2600, awful. Just awful, you know.
Do you have a particular producer of games that you like?
For handhelds, I really like Entex, a company that was based in the States out of Compton. Back in the day, I really like their games. I like the Adventure Vision. I like Epoch. I like any of the LSI VFD for handhelds. I'm a Nintendo guy at heart. I just always felt connected to Nintendo. I like their quality control. They always had decent high quality stuff. They didn't just churn things out, it seemed. Shirugu Miyamoto is, you know, of a gaming god, so I like things that he's involved in. Cave, as far as modern games, I think their games are amazing. They're in such a specific genre, kind of bullet hell shmup games.
Is there any that you just like absolutely hate?
You know, I'm not a big fan of shooters. I wouldn't say I hate them, but it's just, it gets really boring to me. It can be exciting for a little bit, but then it gets kind of boring. And it's just weird to me. Like, we had Area 51 in here, and no one was playing it, and everyone's standing right next to the screen just shooting. It didn't require much skill. They're literally 2 inches away from the screen. It's like, man, that's not how you play a shooting game. Stand back. And also, it has this weird connotation for me. I don't know. It just, to see people sitting there with handguns that look realistic, shooting really seriously, it's just kind of weird. It's not... I understand that that's what most games are, you're shooting something. Yeah. But it's just, I don't know, just not my thing.
What's the oldest game you have here?
Right now, probably Super Breakout, or maybe Abracadabra, somewhere in that zone. It's early 70s.
Yeah. Are there any qualifications or skills you think someone would need if they were coming into this career?
You know, a little bit of decent ability as far as repair. You know, at least being interested in learning that stuff. I don't think you need an electronics degree or any of that. It'd be helpful, but you don't need to have that. I think up front, if you understood how bridge rectifiers work and like the basics of electronics, that would be very helpful. But I think if you're motivated, you can learn it. Because a lot of these games are not that complicated at the end of the day. They're complicated to work on, but at the end of the day, it's not new micro computing or crazy new technology. You know, when traces are that big on a PCB, pretty easy to work on compared to the new stuff, you know.
You talked about you had a free-to-play arcade at the other store.
Yep.
How did that affect the store, the record business?
Well, I think it's helped because it brings people in for another reason. It gives people something to do, and it's fun. You know, it's a fun weekend thing for people to do, to come in, shop for records. They can bring their family, bring their kids, or And if you have someone in your group that's not interested in shopping for records for an hour, they can play games. You know, most people will play games for an hour, even if they're horrible at it and don't enjoy it. They'll putz around on 30 different games, you know.
What do you see yourself doing in 10 years?
Probably trying to find more storage for all the crap that I've collected. You know, that's probably the God's honest truth. Hopefully still doing something related to gaming. I enjoy toys and gaming a lot, and I'd like to be involved in that world as much as I can if I can make a living doing it. You know?
Do you see yourself staying here or moving?
No, I think so. You know, I live in the neighborhood. I work in the neighborhood. I hope to stay in the neighborhood.
How does the bar interact with the gamers?
It's another draw. It's a different draw. I think, obviously, it makes it so it's all adults in here.
Yeah.
Although not everyone acts like adults. I think it's nice. You know, it's makes it social. People come out. They can have a beer, have a drink, and relax and unwind, blow off some steam playing classic games.
What have been the high points of your business experience?
You know, I on and off, I've been able to meet some of my heroes and work with them, both in arcade games and in the music business. So that's been nice, you know. Mm-hmm. I hope there's more high points to come.
Yeah.
That's always the hope. I think we went through quite a bit.
Yeah, well, thank you for the interview.
No problem, man. Hopefully you guys are having fun in that class. Sounds interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Is it mostly about video games or about point-off or about...
That's pretty much everything. Yeah, a little of everything.